Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
This is the next steps. Now that students have applied, what now? And this session was designed to make sure that we're able to articulate really clearly what it is students will go through once they've submitted their application and what we need for them to be aware of and how we can make sure that this process for them is streamlined. And then, of course, as always, soliciting your assistance to make sure that you're able to give students the information so they know what it is that they need to do next. So the overview of this session will be part one, where we'll talk about what happens between the application and the admission process, what happens once they receive the offer of admission, and what kind of things they need to do before they accept the admission, and what things they need to do after making the decision to accept their admission. And then the third part is preparing for the transition, how they should view orientation, and then transfer programs and campus support programs. And these topics will be covered, and then I'll take questions at the very end. There will also be a slide on some additional resources, some websites for students who may be AB 540 and some other additional websites that are general to the University of California system. And then also there usually is a similar office on each campus that students can access if they have more questions. Okay, so between application and admission, the university acknowledgement. The student will get an initial acknowledgement from the application processing center that lets them know that we've received their application, that it has actually been submitted. And with that notification is also their application ID number, which they need to really keep handy, because most of us, when we send students email and ask them to come to our different websites to log in and create a portal for them to receive information, they need that application ID number in order to begin that process. In many cases, we've received calls at our admission office asking us for the application ID number, but please help them understand that the campuses are not responsible for the application. There is an actual processing center that handles and processes the applications, and the numbers are generated from there. And so they need to either go back to that email they received, their confirmation, application confirmation, that information is there, or they can call the application processing center. Once we receive the applications on our campus, then the students will receive another communication that says, this is your PIN number. This is going to be how you will access our individual campus websites. And again, they will use their application ID number and then the PIN that they were given so that they can create their portal. And if we have need to communicate with them, we're able to communicate with them that way. Once they receive that information from us and that email from us, as you know, it's not an acceptance letter. Curiously enough, students will call and say, does this mean I'm accepted? It does not mean that they're accepted. This is simply a way for students to be able to communicate with us and us with them. They may receive an email. In some cases, some campuses may send a regular letter, something in the mail. So they need to make sure, students should really make sure that we have an accurate physical mailing address and that we have an accurate email address, one that is not going to change mid-admission cycle. Oftentimes, students will say, I can't get the PIN because you sent it to this email address. This is no longer an active email address, which means that we would then have to get the new address, confirm that it is actually the student, submit that into our system, wait for the system to upload, and then they would receive the PIN at their new email address. I always encourage students, when they begin this application process, to open an email account that's devoted solely to the process of applying for colleges, and give that same email address on all of their applications, admission, financial aid, whatever that might be, so they know that if they have a communication or an email in that particular account, that it has something to do with one of the colleges that they've applied to. Once this process is over, they can shut that down, and then they don't need to worry about it any longer. But to use their personal email accounts, which are also being utilized by all of their friends and all of their families, things get lost in all of the email that one receives, including all of the advertisements and the spam and all of that that comes into email accounts. So if they open an email account solely devoted to this process of applying, it's much easier for them and it's much easier for us. They can contact, if students need to update their contact information, including their email address, that is done at the processing center. They need to contact the UC Application Processing Service, and That's the email address that, and this is, again, you'll be able to access this PowerPoint at the OP website. But they need to contact the processing service in order to change contact information. Students really need to understand, however, that they cannot change any of their academic record once they've submitted their application, which is why on the application we ask over and over, are you sure this is what you want to submit? You left this out. Are you sure you want to leave this blank? Students can submit that application without the information, but we do give them the prompts to make sure that that is what they want to do. Because once that application is submitted and they say that it's done, then changing the academic information, anything other than contact information, is very difficult. Once they have submitted that application, then they would have to contact the individual campuses in order to change anything else on the application, any of the academic record. Students cannot submit a new personal statement. They must submit that we are going to use the original personal statement. I've had students who have said in the online application, in the personal statement section, that that they are going to mail their personal statement in, so they didn't put anything on the application. And they really need to understand that the process is completely online. Because of the number of applications that each of our campuses receive, it's very difficult to connect a paper copy of anything with the electronic version of the application. So everything needs to be in that electronic application. If there are changes, however, and they are important changes that they need to report, they need to contact each individual campus that they've applied to in order to submit those changes. And each campus may have a slightly different process. Some may allow that to be an online submission. Others may require that it's a fax. Others may say that it has to be a physical letter with an actual signature from the student. So it varies by campus, so they should contact each campus to make sure that they understand how to submit those changes and to make sure those changes are submitted. And it needs to be done in a timely way. To submit changes in mid-April when we are finalizing our decision really doesn't help the student. They need to get those changes into us as early as possible. And it's real important that students read everything from application to admission, read everything, all of the fine print, and keep copies of everything. Because if for some reason there's a glitch in the processing service and the student's application doesn't get to us and they have proof that they submitted that application on time, we will all accept that application as an on-time application. But they need to be able to show us that proof, so they should keep copies of everything. Okay, for the UC deadlines and supplemental information, all UC transfer students, as you know, are required to submit an applicant update. They must update their application, which means they will tell us what their courses and grades were for the fall term and what their planned spring and or summer program may be in winter intercession, anything that they plan to do prior to them enrolling at the campus. The online update for the Office of the President opens at the beginning of January, and the deadline is always the 31st of January. We need to have all of those updates because most of the campuses are still reading their freshman applications during the month of January, so transfer students have a chance to submit all of those updates. We will begin reading transfer applications beginning in February, so those updates need to be in place when we begin reading those applications. So the priority deadline is January 31st. Now, the update site will remain open, and they can submit changes after January 1st. There is just no guarantee that the campuses will be able to consider any of the changes that they submit after January 1st. So it's important that they adhere to the deadlines. They need to, again, have an application ID number, the same username and ID that they used for their application, and then they will be able to get into the OP site and submit those changes. If a student does not know their application ID number, again, they can call the UC Application Processing Center or email them, and they will be able to get a copy of that number. Transfer students should submit the update even if they have no changes or if they don't plan any courses in the fall or the spring. They should still complete that update and say that, no planned courses. Also, the transfer update site is a place where students can submit additional comments. In the last session, there was a question about what if there are changes, what if the student needs to explain something, what if they said they were going to take a course and they couldn't get the course by no fault of their own, how will we know that? There is a place for them to put their comments in this transfer update form. So this is another place that students can give us additional information so we can understand the application. So it's very important that students go and they complete those forms even if they don't plan any courses. If a student is going to add or drop a course, and anything that's going to change from the application, and most often, as you know, students are projecting what they're going to do throughout the year when they submit that application in November. And you know, you never know how what courses they're going to be able to get into, what courses may be offered. There's almost always a difference from what they have on their application to what they report on the transfer update. So they should really make sure that they go in and give us those updates, especially the grades for the fall term. Because the grades for the fall term are computed into their transfer GPA, and that's the GPA we will use to select students. So it's important that they go in and they submit those grades. For Berkeley, as you know, we require an additional step. And students will go to the OP website to submit their transfer updates, but then they need to come to Berkeley, if they've applied to Berkeley, to the My Berkeley application site to submit their prerequisite forms, the courses that are required for their particular prerequisites, for their particular intended major if it's required. And then there is a GPA calculator, and then there is a place where they will tell us how they plan to meet BREATH for the particular college that they're interested in. Again, the deadline is January 31st. Students should make sure that they complete that on time. For those students who do not complete the Berkeley updates, it can and will seriously jeopardize their admission to Berkeley. We need that information. In addition to that, for students that don't submit that application information, or students who don't completely fill out their IGETSE form and show us exactly how they're going to meet IGETSE and how they're going to be certified IGETSE. As you know, if you say you're going to certify them, we say fine. We don't go through and say, well, I don't know about this course and I don't know about that course. And if it's a four-year school, can you use that? If you say it's IGETSE, we say it's IGETSE at Berkeley. However, if the student partially fills out the form, we are not going to go through their transcript to try to figure out if they have IGETSE. They need to complete that form. We will, however, go in to see if they meet our LNS BREATH. And as you know, the critical thing, the difference between IGETSE and LNS BREATH, is the reading and composition. So we are going to go in, if the student has not filled out the forms, we will automatically evaluate to see if they've met our LNS BREATH, First College of Letters and Science. If they have not met LNS BREATH, even if they've partially filled out the IGETSE form, we consider them having lax BREATH, so it's important that they fill those forms out. The applicants, as you know, we don't require students to submit any transcripts prior to their admission. However, there are some campuses that will accept the official transcripts for students who submit applications. It's important that students know that even though you have certified their language other than English with a high school course or high school courses, that they still need to submit, and they've submitted an official transcript to you, they still need to submit an official high school application to us as well. So they need to be aware that they may need to submit two high school transcripts. Also, for students who are have foreign transcripts or have come to you from out of the country, they also need to have an official transcript. So for those students who have copies of their official transcript, initially we will accept that and sustain their admission, but at some point they will need to have an official transcript from their country that is, if it's not in English, that's officially translated into English for us to have for our records. If that's going to take some time, then students need to begin working on that process early. So no matter where it is that they are going to enroll, if they know for UC they're going to need to have an official transcript, they can have that official transcript sent directly to them at their home. As long as they don't open it, it still remains sealed. We will accept it as an official transcript from that institution. All of our document deadlines are July 15th, and I'll go into that a little bit later. For the admission decisions, all of the UCs will notify students between March and May whether or not they've been admitted. As you may know, some of the campuses are still finalizing their decisions for transfer students, and they should be out by the end of this coming week. Every student should be notified about their status for transfer into the UCs. Some notify earlier, others later, depending on the campus, but every student should be notified by the end of May. So once a student has been admitted, students typically will go in and they'll see the congratulations and they get really happy, and then they close out they close down the website and they go celebrate and they call their relatives and they let you know that they've been admitted to their campus, and it's a wonderful, gleeful, wonderful time for them, which is great. But then they need to come back, because they need to check for the deadlines, they need to check their conditions of admission. It's really interesting how many students have will say that they did not realize that they needed to have that particular transcript, or they didn't realize that they needed a separate certification of IGETSE. They thought just your transcript would be enough. Some community colleges put the certification on the transcripts, and others don't. So they need to understand that, and they need to research that to see if there's an extra step that they need to follow in order to meet all of the requirements. They need to check for deadlines to make sure that they get all of the documents in by July 15th. That's an important deadline. They need to make sure that they get their housing applications in on time, that they meet their financial aid deadlines. So they need to carefully read through all of the conditions. Most of the campuses will require that will ask a student to check that they have read the condition before they submit their SIR. So we really want to encourage students, and a lot of the deadlines don't even come up until students submit the SIR. So they really need to check those conditions and make sure that they can meet the conditions. The conditions are really important because in some cases they may be very personalized for that particular student. If we see that a student is a very strong student otherwise but left a single course off of their IGETSE grid, and they left a course off the grid, otherwise a very strong student, we may say, make sure you complete this course by the end of summer in order to sustain their admission. They need to understand that. So there is a lot of detail that can be in a condition of admission. In some cases, it's a generic condition, which means you have to complete what you said you were going to complete. You have to make sure that you get the transcripts in. You have to make sure that you contact your admissions officer if anything changes. And you want to make sure that they understand when the orientation sessions are. So there's a lot of good information on the conditions of admission, and students really, really need to read those carefully. For orientation sessions, they're just at our campuses just like they are at your campuses. In some cases, they are mandatory. They have to go to the orientation in order to be able to register for classes. So they, again, that will be on the conditions of admission. All of the dates and when they're available will be on the conditions of admission. And students need to pay attention to that. I encourage students to go to orientation anyway, whether it's mandatory or not, because this is a new campus, this is a new system they're going into, this is a new environment, and to have as much information beforehand is always a benefit to the student. But if it's mandatory on the campus that they attend orientation and they don't, in some cases they may not be able to register in the classes that they need. And as transfer students, as you know, they really need to move forward in declaring that major or moving toward their degree. So it's important that they attend those orientations. Students also need to understand that the admission is provisional and that their admission can and will be canceled if they don't meet their conditions of admission. We as admissions officers, once we've admitted students, we really have selected those students carefully and we want those students to come. So we have a lot of flexibility and we are willing to work with students if they have circumstances that may arise, if something happens with their courses, if they just have a bad semester or whatever it may be. We really want to work with those students to make sure that we are able to give them another plan, perhaps give them a different path so that their admission can be sustained. It's that student that has some changes, that never communicates with us, that doesn't respond to our email, that comes and registers for courses anyway without the documents having been received. Those students can be canceled even into the semester after they've moved here, after they've moved to their campus, after they're in courses. They can still be canceled. So the communication between the student and the admission officer is real important. So please stress to them, as you know, when your students don't come to you and work with you, then afterward they come, even after we've canceled them, they come back to you, and they probably haven't seen you in a couple of semesters or so. So it's important that students know that the same kind of relationship that they've established with you, they need to establish that same relationship with their admission officer on the UC campus. Again, we will try to work with them to make sure that we are as flexible as possible. If students have a failing grade in the spring, we may offer them an opportunity to make that grade up in the summer. But we need to have that communication in order to establish that. So that's real important. This is the third time, carefully review the conditions. The conditions say everything, and students need to understand that. They need to agree to meet all of the conditions. In many cases, they have to physically say that I have carefully read and agreed to these conditions. They need to complete all of the coursework that they have put on their transfer update form, because that's what we're holding them to, those courses that they've put on the update form. They need to immediately report any changes in their courses, no matter how minor they may think it is. It's always a good idea just to shoot a quick email and say, is this going to make a difference? For the most part, it probably won't. But if it does, at least the student understands that they are what it is they need to do. Then also for students who students submit their transcripts. It's a self-report, and we admit them on a self-report. When we receive the transcripts, we will make a comparison to make sure that they did accurately report all of their courses and grades based on what we see on the transcript. On occasion, we have students who might decide not to report a poor grade because they've already repeated that grade, and so they just report the new grade. Tell students they should report them both. We will also take that grade out, but they should report everything that's on their transcript. So whatever is reflected on your transcript is what they should put on the application when they submit that application. Okay? Again, if the student is unlikely or will not meet the conditions, they should let us know that right away. Each campus has its own set of conditions, so there's not just one condition, so they should read them all, depending on the number of campuses that they've been admitted to. There are a lot of similarities with the conditions of admission, but then there are some specific differences, and students should understand what those specific differences are. So, again, carefully reading the conditions is something that they should really make sure that they do for each campus that they've been admitted to. An example of some of the differences are that some campuses, if there is a change, some campuses may request or require that the student submit that in writing so that it can be reviewed either by the admission officer or by a committee within that office. And they need to make sure that they have the appropriate mailing address or email address or however that should be submitted. They need to make sure that they understand how to submit that information. Again, all final documents need to be in by the 15th. If anything changes after the 15th, again, they need to make sure that they contact their admission officer. The differences may be that some campuses on the conditions may require a different minimum GPA for the semesters that are remaining. Some may require a 2.0 GPA, some may require a 3.0 GPA, some may have other types of conditions that students need to meet in order for their admission to be sustained. So they really want to know what those differences are. Again, before accepting the offer, students should visit the campuses that they are considering. Make sure that they contact. They may even have an opportunity to meet their admission officer if they may make arrangements ahead of time. But it's important, of course, that it's a good fit, that the campus is a good fit for them. Many of the UCs have preview days in the fall that students can attend if they want to kind of get a sense of the feel of that campus before they apply. But certainly after they've applied and they've been admitted, if they have not had an opportunity to visit the campus, then they should make sure that they take the time to visit that campus to make sure it's a good fit. Most of us have yield events that will allow students to come and talk with their college or talk with their advisor, get information about other resources on campus. So, and most of that information is on their portal page at the campus that they've been admitted to, on a checklist or an events tab or somewhere. It's in that portal what type of events are available and the locations of those events. And so they should take a look at that. They should compare financial aid offers. As you know, an offer at one UC is not the same offer that they may get at another UC. We don't have the same financial aid process. So they may get differential type of awards from the different UCs. So they should compare those. And then check to see if housing is guaranteed for transfer students. In some cases, it may be guaranteed for a year. In other cases, it may be guaranteed for 2 years. In some cases, it may not be guaranteed at all. So they should understand what their options are before they accept their admission. After they accept their admission, after they decide they're going to come, they need to make sure that they get their statement of intent to register in by June 1st. Some campuses will not accept a late SIR after June 1st. So June 1st is the deadline that they need to have on their radar in order to make sure that they're able to submit that SIR. The other benefit of an on-time SIR is that they want to make sure that they meet all of the other deadlines that follow that SIR deadline, housing or financial aid or other program deadlines. So that on-time deadline is real important. It is a $100 non-refundable fee. As was mentioned in the other workshop, we ask students only SIR to one campus. If they SIR to more than one campus, then they will be contacted by the Office of the President, and then they will be asked to choose. So they still must choose just one campus. Also, all students must submit their statement of legal residence to the registrar's office. Now, I know that we have a lot of residency information on the application when the student submits that application, but the residency office requires that students submit this statement of legal residence. This set their tuition for the upcoming year. For students who are AB 540, this is how we know that they're AB 540 students. For students who do not submit this SLR, they get a sticker shock when they get that bill that includes the non-resident fee. So need to make sure that the students go ahead and submit that SLR, and again, that needs to be in on time. All of the deadlines, the document deadlines are July 15th. If we have students that have not submitted one of their documents by July 15th, then we will send a notification saying that we have not received this document. Students will receive several different emails saying the document deadline is approaching. Make sure that you get these things in. After July 15th, they will receive one, maybe two additional communications saying we haven't received it. Please get it in right away or contact your admission officer. The next one is most likely we haven't received it, so your application is up for cancellation. Finally, if in some cases it goes to a third communication, then the students will get a notification saying that your admission has been canceled. And if they wish to appeal, they can do that. But we need to make sure that we get all of those document deadlines by July 15th. I'll take your question at the very end, okay? Again, the IGETSE certification. Students don't realize in some cases that the certification is separate from your transcript request. So we will have everything that we need, but we don't have the certification. And students should also be aware and talk with you about which campuses will accept a partial and which ones require a full IGETSE certification in order for them to be selected. And there are a number of grids on the OP website where you have the PDF documents for ETS, and the grids will tell you which campuses will accept partial and how to submit a partial if a student is not going to be able to get it. There are a number of different reasons why a student may need to submit a partial IGETSE. But for the most part, we want to see everything completed with that July 15th document deadline. If the students don't submit those documents, as I mentioned, their admission, their SIR will be canceled. Once the SIR is canceled and the student is no longer, we assume that the student is not coming to our campus, then for some of us, there is no going back. There's no saying, well, you know, I didn't meet the deadline. I thought I was going to go someplace else. Now I want to come there. I had an SIR. Can I now submit it? It may be too late. So students need to really carefully think about where they're going to submit that SIR. Okay, again, failure to meet conditions can result in cancellation. We actually encourage those students who know that they're not going to meet their conditions to not SIR so that they don't have the they don't submit that $100, which is non-refundable. And we will let them know if we think that is not in their best interest to SIR to our individual campuses. They really need to make sure that they review their conditions to make sure that they will be able to fully meet them before they SIR. And that's probably something that students should actually bring that condition of admission into you and talk with you about to make sure that they are going to be able to comply and meet all of those conditions. If a student is not going to meet the conditions, we need to have everything in writing. Again, we will work with the students and remain flexible, but there are some things that we have to have. So students need, if the earlier the students start that communication with their admission officer, then the better. Once a student has SIR'd and everything is fine, they need to make sure that they apply for housing on time. They need to meet all of the housing deadlines. Some campuses, depending on the type of housing that a transfer student in particular may want, may have waiting lists, particularly like family housing almost always has a waiting list. So the sooner that they are able to get their names on that list, the better. The sooner they're able to submit those applications, the better. They should also consult with financial aid if their financial situation has changed since they submitted their FAFSA and any supplemental application. Then there may be some recourse for the student to have that financial aid offer reconsidered and reevaluated. But they need to make sure that they're in contact with financial aid in order to make sure that they are able to have time to be able to make any adjustments that are available. Again, the IGETSE certification, it is truly the responsibility of the student. We typically don't call the certifier and say we haven't gotten a certification from this particular student. In some cases, for those of us who have established relationships with you, I may call you on a particular student, but for the most part, it is really the student's responsibility to submit that, to request it from you, and to get that certification into us on time. And it's real important that students understand that once they've been admitted to UC, that they need to make sure that they contact their admission officer before enrolling in any four-year institution, even a UC summer program. They need to make sure that they contact us so that they are not in jeopardy of being in excess units for their particular campus or college. So they should contact us before enrolling at any four-year institution. Anything they do with you over the summer is fine, but any four-year institution, they should check with their admission officer before enrolling. Some of our UCs have summer programs that are specifically designed for matriculating transfer students. And that information will be available on their website portal. So they should go ahead and take a look and see what the benefits may be for that. There's probably a fee, a summer session fee, but they should go ahead and see if that's not something that might be beneficial for them. A head start into some classes, acclimating themselves with the campus, getting to know other students or faculty, getting the lay of the land of the campus prior to the beginning of the fall term. So looking at summer programs is a good thing to do. Courses to take, whatever, you know, they should start with the courses that will follow whatever courses they finish with you. Summer courses are something that they may be encouraged to do on their conditions of admission. They certainly can take a look at doing those courses, but start to begin if they have any lower division courses to finish and they can't or don't wish to complete them with you, they can certainly do that. But there are advisors for summer session that will be able to help students to determine which courses that they should take. Again, orientation. Students should attend the orientation. In some cases, that's where they will register for their fall term, for their courses. They will meet with an advisor and they will have a chance to meet with the advisors in their college. So they should attend the orientation if possible. And again, the benefit is that they become acclimated to the campus. They get a tour and know where things are. They meet other students. They have an opportunity to kind of begin that transition into the four-year institution. They can go in and see all of the transfer support services. So orientation is real important. Some schools will offer orientation sessions for parents where they can have kind of a cohort experience along with the student. But again, there are usually fees, but it's well worth it because the orientation is where students will get that advising. So it's important that they take advantage of that. They should also be aware of all of the resources that we do have. Most of our campuses have great transfer support service programs, programs that are designed specifically to be a kind of a one-stop shop for transfer students so that if they need something, they can go to this place and they can find what it is that they will need. We have student learning centers that will help students with tutoring. We'll give them some assistance with study skills and time management and those kind of services. They can establish study groups, which is real important in UC, that students know how to establish and to become involved in a study group. There's one-on-one tutoring that students may be able to take advantage of, either peer tutoring. In some cases, it may be the student assistants. And then they should also make sure to take advantage of the faculty and the teaching assistants' office hours. All of our faculty and our graduate student instructors are required to have open office hours for students to come in to be able to ask questions. As a student at UC, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't had the graduate student instructor there that I could go in and just kind of talk with to make sure that I was getting the curriculum. And they are really open to making sure that they spend the time with students to give them what it is that they need. Faculty also really enjoy talking with their undergraduate students. They have these office hours, and sometimes they are there for an hour, hour and a half, and nobody comes. And they really want to get to know and to interact with the graduate students. So to take advantage of the office hours is real important. Getting to know the instructors, I think, is real important. You may see them on campus having lunch or riding a bike or at a restaurant or something. And you know, students need to begin realizing, especially for transfer students, that as they're preparing for professional schools and graduate schools, they're going to need letters of recommendation and they're going to need these kind of resources. So going in and getting to know their instructors in the office hours is a way to begin that process. There are also services on campus that will help students with their social and personal needs. There are health centers, there are psychological services, there are a lot of different workshops that students can take advantage of. There are a lot of transfer-specific programs for students that are student parents, that are foster care or formerly foster care students, that are military students. So we have a lot of different services specifically for students in certain groups. So students should take a look at the websites and go to the transfer service programs to find out who and where they should go if they need assistance in this respect. Okay, so in summary, we want to make sure the students adhere to all of the deadlines. That's really important. It's a wonderful time to receive this offer of admission, but again, it's important for students to understand that admission is conditional, that there is a condition to that admission, and in order for that admission to be honored and for them to be able to matriculate, they need to meet all of those conditions. So they need to make sure that they read them so they can make an informed choice as a yes, because if they've got multiple offers, they want to make sure that they are selecting the campus that is the best campus for them and the one that they will be able to meet the conditions. And please encourage them, again, to contact their admission officer if there are any changes or if they have any concerns or any questions. We really look forward to the students coming to the campuses, and we want to make sure that they're able to get all of the services that they need prior to them SIRing, and certainly after they've SIRed. Okay? So we're going to open it up for questions. I have some assistance with a microphone. So I know the gentleman in the back here had a question.
Thank you. You mentioned email notification of missing documentation. Is that email notification specific, or does it generally refer them to the portal to find the missing documents?
Usually it's quite specific. It will tell a student that this is what we're missing, this was the deadline, this is what we don't have.
And assuming the student has submitted all required documentation, does that cancel that track, that email notification, or do you continue to send general email information about possible missing documentation, even though all documentation may have already been submitted?
No. Generally, if we receive the document, then it is recorded in the system, so and in the student's file, so we know that we've received that, and they should not receive repeated email. However, if they are receiving a repeated email and it's something that they know that they've submitted, they should contact their admission officer so we can track it down and find out where it is.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your presentation.
Sure.
It may be an easy question, but I get asked of it all the time. It relates to the document deadline for final transcripts by July 15th. Mm-hmm. For students who enrolled in summer school, mm-hmm. how would you prefer? Would you prefer for them to go ahead and send you a final transcript and then another one showing the summer school grades after that summer session is over? Because oftentimes our summer session is over like July 31st, August right. 5th. So it's only a couple weeks difference, mm-hmm. but we're worried again about not having documents in by July 15th.
No. If the student is taking a summer session and they have been in communication with their admission officer, then we only require one final official transcript that shows everything. In fact, we prefer that we just get one final official transcript that shows everything through that summer term. All the other documents, high school or whatever, their certification, if they can, they should get that into us earlier. But they should let us know that they're taking a summer course and it's been approved by their admission officer, then one transcript is fine.
Okay, so if they let you know, mm-hmm. so letting you know that part, would that be through the UC application update? Would that be a phone call to their admission officer? Would it be an email?
Or it could
maybe
be any
all of
the above.
Yeah,
depending on which campus and how they've asked that students communicate with them.
Okay, great.
Usually for us, Berkeley, we want an email because we want to put that in the file so we have the documentation.
Okay. You said June 1st is the deadline to submit the SIR. What about for students who have been waitlisted and won't hear from the UC campuses until June 1st?
Most of the campuses, as they were saying in the campus updates, if a student is notified late, then typically they will give that student at least 2 weeks to submit that SIR, and that would be in their conditions. So they'll know what their particular deadline is. If you have a student that doesn't know and they've received a late admit, and it's up against that June 1st deadline, they should certainly contact their the office and to make sure that they have adequate time. But from what I heard before, that all of the campuses are going to allow an adequate period of time, even if it's beyond the June 1st deadline.
I was curious if there was any possibility of fee waivers for that $100 for students who are impoverished, or if there's any fee waiver for any orientation fees, and if that's done by the individual campuses.
Yeah, the waivers are done by individual campuses. For the most part, for the SIR fee, if the student is determined to be EOP eligible, they will automatically get a fee deferral for the SIR. If a student is having a hardship, they can always request it for the individual campuses. As far as orientation is concerned, I don't know that there is a deferral for the fee. Ivera?
Hi. Many of the campuses, for their orientation fee, you can contact that campus specifically, or what they're doing is they're actually deferring the cost to the student's registration fee bill for the fall term. And so if they're eligible for financial aid, then the financial aid fees can cover the orientation if they can't pay it up front.
Mm-hmm. They should certainly check with each campus to find out what that process is and how to go about setting that in place.
Hi, you mentioned you want to see all courses on the, you know, even if they're replacing a course for improvement of grade. Do you also want to see non-transferable courses that a student might take at a community college to prepare?
We actually ask them to, whatever's on your transcript, that they put that in the application, even if it's non-transferable. We say that because we're not really asking the student to do that type of evaluation. We'll do that work. But if we can see everything the student does, because keep in mind that in some cases, even though the course may not be transferable, it is an indication of the rigor and the amount of work that the student has done while they've been with you. So it could really be to their advantage. So I just say if it's on your transcript, they should put it on the application.
I'm not sure if this is the right place to ask this question, but I know in the past Santa Cruz and Riverside would extend, invitations to students who were maybe denied admissions to other campuses but met all the minimum qualifications through their referral pool. I don't believe they're doing that this time around, but I wonder if you know if Merced will begin to do that or if they are doing that.
My understanding is that Merced, because they said that they were not, So, but Ivera's shaking her head yes, and she works at the Office of the President, so most likely they are doing the referral. Now, when they will notify students, I'm not sure, so you might stop at their table to ask when they are completing that referral process. And I know the other campuses are not, like Riverside, they're not doing that. But, you might stop at their table and see when they will begin sending out those notifications. I know it probably will not happen until after the SIRs because those targets and things, but you can check and see.
Hi, Michelle. Is this on? I think it is. It's just my voice. Hi, Michelle. Yesterday I had a student who's, this is regard, you said you, if a student doesn't meet their conditions, I think you said you don't want them to SIR. But I do have a student who has a tag, only applied to one UC, and he had to drop a calculus class because of extenuating circumstances. Mm-hmm. So we're not sure what he should do. I know he's going to contact the campus.
Right.
But meanwhile, the SIR deadline's coming up. He may go into appeal, and then he may not have an answer before that June 1st deadline.
Right.
So how would you advise that student?
I would say that the student, again, should be in contact with that admission officer for that campus, because they can give any leeway that's available to that student would have to come directly from that campus. If the student has extenuating circumstances that's beyond their control, again, we almost will always work with that student to make sure that we can give them an alternate path or give them, tell them whatever options that they may have. But it really is going to lie with that that campus and that college. So if it's a calculus class that the college says they have to have, you know, it's either, you know, the class or bust, then he needs to know that well ahead of time so that he doesn't allow other offers to expire and he's waiting for a decision here. So it's just going to be really critical that they talk with the admissions officer early on, I would say right away. Let them know what the extenuating circumstances are. If you can provide support and substantiate the circumstance, that always goes very far. When you guys tell us this is what happened and it wasn't the student's fault, we almost will always say fine.
Hi, I was hoping you can clarify just the IGETC certification timeline process. It seems a little unclear to me. I mean, once they receive their offer, will it always be stated in there that they need to move through that process, or will there be times when we as counselors should encourage them to go ahead and seek the certification once they receive the letter, regardless?
Right. Well, again, the student must meet breath. So they know how, hopefully, they know how they are doing that well before they apply. Are they working toward IGETC? Are they working toward a campus-specific breath requirement, a college-specific breath requirement? How are they going to meet that general education pattern? So they should know that well before they've applied. So all of the conditions will say that they need to show how they are going to meet this breath requirement, whatever that is. So as your counselee, I would assume that they may have already talked with you about they're going to do IGETC or they're going to do general GE for the UC or whatever that might be. And they need to also understand how they can prove that, or how that certification with IGETC, how are they going to get that certification? Do you provide that certification for them? Do you have a certifier on your campus that they then need to make an appointment with and take their transcripts and have that evaluated and approved? Is it something that's automatically on the transcript? The students really need to understand, if they're going to use IGETC, what that process is for them on your campus. And I think that's why they need to be in contact with you. And early on, I think, is better.
Do you have a timeline on the UC side? I mean, is it July 15th?
July 15th.
Okay.
That's it.
I'm so sorry to ask so many questions.
That's okay, Deborah. That's okay.
This one goes back to the UC app update site.
Yes.
And there is a deadline of January 31st.
Right.
But just, I think last week or the week before, we had our drop deadlines, and that's when students were dropping. Mm-hmm. And some of the classes they would drop would not make them ineligible, or it wasn't for a pre-major requirement. But should they be reporting that on that UC application update?
Yeah, any changes that they make, they should submit that on the
even
application
update. Even at this
update.
Late stage of
right.
the game.
Now,
right.
whether or not we'll go in and take a look at it because of where we are with our decisions is another story. But if a student has a change to their application, because remember, we're admitting them based on what they said they are going to do there. And while it may not affect units, it may not be for prereq, it still needs to be reported because it can have an effect. It may not, but it can have an effect. So students should notify right away if they've withdrawn from classes. Now, at this point, if the student has already been admitted to the particular campus, they shouldn't go to the update site. They should go directly to that admission officer or to that campus to report that, because they've already been admitted now. So they need to report, and they should report that to each of the campuses that they've been admitted to. And certainly if they SIR, they need to report that to the campus that they've SIR'd to.
That's that portal.
Yes, yes. Now, I believe that the portal went down on the 30th, didn't it, Iver? Do you know? Transfer update?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're not able to really go in and update there anymore. They should really go in and contact the admissions officer, the campus and admissions officer. Yeah, whatever that is on each campus. Yeah, their portal. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Enjoy lunch.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.